Today we're going to be doing a panel on the difference between academic, agency, government, or commercial career paths. I believe we're going to be a little bit more informal for this session, so we're going to start with just a Q&A with the crowd. I think when we get to the end, if there's anything anybody would like to add that hasn't been addressed already, and at the very end we have a little PowerPoint just for kind of a fun little thing to end with.
Brief introduction.
Oh, yes, brief introductions. I'll just go down the line. Like I said, my father, Craig Campbell, he is the a senior field R&D scientist with Valent USA. Dr. Brian Pearson, representing academia. He is, like I said, my major professor and an assistant professor with the University of Florida, specifically in environmental horticulture. Dr. Richard Campbell, he is the senior VP for global operations for Cerulli Brothers, which is a large a mango operation. That's a horrible way to describe that. Fruits and vegetables, all right. And then Dr. Ed Stover, who is a research horticulturist with the USDA ARS, the Agricultural Research Service. All right. So I believe we're just going to do a Q&A. Okay, do you want me to go through the questions or just start with the audience?
Start with a couple of questions and then we'll go on.
Okay.
That's what happens when you invite your dad.
Yes, yes. I thought I was moderating, but apparently not.
What made you believe that?
You're right. I have been told as a Campbell I should know better, but all right. So is your current career path the one you intended? And if not, what made you modify your career trajectory?
Come up to the mic. This is being recorded.
Okay. So I don't know if we want to speak loudly, if we want to come to the mic.
Who wants to start?
Go ahead. All right.
Well, I don't think anyone's career path follows a straight line, as several of our speakers have mentioned. Chance plays an important and difficult to define role in all of our decisions. But after my first year of college, I decided I wanted to be a plant breeder. And initially, I was going to be a breeder of important grain crops that feed the world. But then, after my master's degree, in which I discovered sorghum really wasn't that interesting to me, and that perhaps I really was more compelled by hedonism than nobility, I moved into fruit crops, and that's the direction I've gone ever since. I've been on the faculty of two different universities, as well as being an ARS scientist now for 14 years. So it's a path that's difficult to envision, but just enjoy the ride.
So certainly my current position is not the path that I thought I would be on, because I always thought I would be working at the university or at the university until I died. And actually, I never have worked for the University of Florida. I worked for a not-for-profit for a botanical garden in Miami for the past 26 years until I changed recently. And the second I left Virginia Tech with my PhD, I never looked back, but I always used all of that I learned in grad school, and all of those contacts, and that base is what took me on my trajectory. I always knew I'd work in tropical fruit, and that's what I've done, but it's never been conventional in any way.
No, I had never, ever intended to be a professor at an institution, academic institution, never even thought about it. Did my bachelor's and master's, I enjoyed the whole concept of being involved with research, being involved with colleagues in a lab. I stopped for a year, became a hydrogeologist, again, far removed from horticulture, but I missed research. So about a year later, I quit my job, I applied to a position at the University of Florida, and been there ever since. The environment, and I guess as we come on and talk about some of these other questions or questions from you guys, what do I love about it? Interactions with students, pursuit of science, freedom of doing work, and that really drew me to that, and I have to say that I'm absolutely in love with the career and the career path I chose, but certainly not something that I was planning on, particularly in my freshman year.
When getting my Master of Science at the University of Florida, I worked on a post-harvest project with Carambola Starfruit, and the company that sponsored that project offered me a job. An opportunity knocked, I answered the door. So I went to work. Stayed there for 7 years, became research director, and then a hurricane destroyed Homestead, Florida, when Sean was 4 months old. And so we rebuilt our house. I was going to stay forever. And then opportunity knocked again. They offered me a good job in Orlando with a promotion and much better pay. And I asked my wife, do you want to go, baby? And she says, when can we leave? Let's get out of this destroyed town. Right? It was my hometown. So made that change, went to work for Abbott Laboratories, a large pharmaceutical company. But then they sold the division. And I ended up working for Valent, where I still work now, owned by Sumitomo Chemical of Japan. They own 150 ag chemical companies across the world. 2 years ago, lateral transfer. They said, no, the R&D group doesn't work for Valent Biosciences anymore. Now they work for Valent USA. I have a new job. I didn't plan it. It wasn't even opportunity knocking. It was like, well, sign the paper or you don't come to work next Monday. So, you know, these are the types of things that happen. Play for a team. Be a team player. Be loyal and be a team player, and you can usually will land on your feet. Company knows that. Company very much values loyalty. That's a big part of working in the industry.
Do one or two more of the prompted questions. So what was the most challenging aspect of obtaining your current position?
Okay. Well, this is going to be a pretty strange answer. I'd say the most challenging aspect of my obtaining my current position was deciding to leave my previous job, which was as the curator of tropical fruits. I'm sorry, curator of fruits and nuts at Davis, California, a great community. My family enjoyed living there, but we had issues with our parents getting older, and it was time to move much closer to them. And so the family made the decision. That was the one more piece of randomness influencing my life.
Same for me. What did I just tell you a moment ago? Hurricane had destroyed the town. Fruit company was doing okay, but I got an opportunity and asked my wife, and she said, yeah, I'd really like to leave. So I was really mulling that over. What was the hardest part about getting my newest position? Fitting in on a new team. Trying to make sure I had a place on a new team, because guess what? Six of us were transferred in that lateral transfer. At the end of the year, they fired two of us, right? 25-year-old veteran, 25-year veteran with a company. Two of us didn't have a job after Christmas. And so, wow, you know, the four guys that fit in. I don't mean to scare folks. I just mean to tell you that that's the way the world works, right? So fit in on the team, work hard, make a place for yourself, and do it in a way that you're not stepping over people, because that person might be your job and your boss in 2 or 3 years, right? That happens all the time too.
Being patient, and not all faculty positions are created equal. And so right after I finished my PhD, I couldn't wait to get a position, start my new academic career. But trying to find one that fit my skill set and my interest the best, trying to find one that teaching, research, and extension appointments are appropriate for what I preferred. And unfortunately, I'm still trying to work for my job, because once you get an assistant professor position, then the next step, of course, is making tenure. So just trying to be productive and efficient and doing everything you can to try to retain that position at that institution and develop a program that is unique in your own.
So the most challenging part of for me to go into the new position was to give up my dream. I was born to be a tropical fruit curator that I worked for a botanical garden. That's where I was going to die. I had never...
How many years?
I was 27 years in that position, and, you know, the greatest position in the world. Walk in, they handed me a pencil, showed me a desk, and they said, make a tropical fruit program, whatever that means. And I love that. It's the greatest thing. You talk about freedom and also being scared, because when they tell you to do that, you don't. There's no rule. There's no book. There's no place that teaches you how to be a plant collector. There's no place that, you know, Virginia Tech did not teach me how to go out and collect plants. What taught me about that is I like people, I like culture, and I'm not afraid of anything. And so that's what I did. And I applied good science to it. The other thing that was made it so hard to make it to a new job, to make the latest switch that I made, was I wasn't able to do that job until very recently. Because what I do now is set up global programs for fruits and vegetables coming into the United States, and I manage huge acreages of mangoes in other countries and other fruit. And you can't do that when you're 26. coming out of college. You can't. You don't have the experience. You don't know how to do it. And it took me a long time to learn how to do it. And so that was the most challenging thing.
Good point. I guess learn to walk before you run. So. All right. This is actually a question I picked myself. It is on the list. But being a graduate student and my PhD, this is something that means a lot to me. How would you describe your freedom to pursue science?
So one of the leaders in the USDA Agricultural Research Service shortly after I joined ARS made the comment to me that was very compelling. We are not curiosity-driven. We are mission-driven. So unlike an academic position where essentially if you can get a grant, you can do almost anything, instead I have to somehow convince them that what it is I want to do fits within my job description. Fortunately, that's not hard to do. I think I have about 45 different projects. And one thing that I would encourage each of you to do if you're interested in becoming a principal investigator is take on a fair number of projects because many of them are going to fail. At the other hand, don't take on too many because that's one of the biggest mistakes a young scientist can make, never bring them to conclusion. So as it is, I get to do the most exciting science that I've ever done. I collaborate extensively with people. I get to know other folks. I show them that I will follow through on what I say I'm going to do and will do my part. And people, geniuses, will work with you, and you can make a lot of progress.
I want to go here.
The company gives me a mission. We register biorational pesticides with the US EPA, we write labels, and we make sure they have a good return on investment for growers. And then our salespeople sell them, and then I help the salespeople make sales occasionally. I'm the technical expert, and I do that. So a lot of the creativity that I get to use is how to best conduct an experiment. I know what the question is, but and I don't get to choose the research question, but I get to choose how it's done. I get to choose who I collaborate with. I've collaborated with Ed. I've collaborated with many of the researchers who are here at this conference, as well as excellent private research companies. And so that's how I get to use my creativity and innovative skills, is to do the best job possible. Because previous speaker Ryan mentioned R&D for private companies comes from revenue. And you think about it, you have to sell maybe $100 million worth of products to get $25 million in research funding for the company, right? Because that's all the profit you're going to make from that $100 million in sales. So, you know, that's a real important equation. So they value those research dollars very greatly. And so that's how I get to do it.
To follow up with Ed's comment, if I can get funding for something, I get to do it. Not that writing grants is always the most fun experience in dealing with our grants folks, but no, probably one of the coolest parts of the job is just the fact that if I can bring in money and I could be productive and demonstrate that productivity in terms of output, whether that be teaching classes, extension, or publications, you're kind of allowed to do what you want in some extent. And I think that's one of the big lures and things that I appreciate about the position. It's also one of the most difficult things to explain to other people that aren't scientists, that don't work in academia. What do you do? Kind of what I want, if I can bring in money. But again, that's probably one of the best benefits in my life, the thing that I appreciate most about the position.
Can I interject and say, could you please tell the story of how we got started in hops? I think it is rather relevant. He thinks I'm messing with him, but it is rather relevant.
No, that's a good point, John. Hops research in Florida, kind of odd. Not necessarily known. Sunshine State isn't known for its hops. But I'm an avid home brewer, and I was brewing beer in my backyard on a Sunday. Purchased some hops from a local homebrew shop. I wasn't happy with the quality. Thought, why can't I grow them? I'm a horticulturist. Came in Monday, found out there wasn't a whole lot of information about producing this crop in a crop that prefers much more northerly climates in Florida. And so what started off with a beer ended with a beer. Full circle, but also along the way brought in $400,000, multiple publications, extension articles, students that had interest, go figure, students like beer. And I love when my administration said that your students are interested in your research. It's beer. But again, good example, Sean, about something that was a personal interest that became an academic program with significant implications.
So I guess I approach it a little bit differently when it comes to how do I get my scientific fix that I need out of the world. Because when you sit down, I mean, I spend a lot of my time with chain store buyers who don't care about my scientific curiosity in any way. They just want to know how many millions of boxes of mangoes we're going to supply to them. So what I do is I actually learn from Norm Childers, a great horticulturist in the United States. He was Rutgers and then retired to the University of Florida. And he sat me down when I was a grad student and he told me, you know what? He says, whatever you want to do, just pay for it. So if I write for Edible South Florida magazine, I write for various other magazines for farmers markets and home growing, because we have a little, our own little mango orchard and homestead that my kids run. So I do my science basically on the side while I do my other job. And so then I try to apply that as much back to it, eventually with the idea that, for instance, when I retire from what I do now about trouncing around the world and setting up growing programs, I want to be like Norm Childers and go back and teach courses at the University of Florida. And they're not just going to let me do that. I'm going to have to pay for it the first time and show them that I can do that course to make people get excited to come in there, because the opportunities are amazing. You guys live in a perfect time, by the way. The opportunities for horticulture have never been this good. Honestly, it's amazing.
Sales pitch.
All right. Well, I think from here we're going to move to audience questions. So if anybody would like to ask anything, you can ask the entire panel, a specific member, pretty much just open for anything. Anybody have anything like to ask? Hi.
Ed and everybody else.
Could you stand up, please, so we can hear you better?
Yeah, good question, Flavia. I'll repeat the essence of it anyway. So Flavia's question was, how do you get someone to collaborate with you, especially if it's someone who does not seem to be willing to collaborate? And what my first response is, you don't want to collaborate with that person. Learn from them if you can. So the way I approach things, and I think you've got to show a lot of curiosity, ask a lot of questions, show humility. You know, you want to learn something from this person, propose to them the idea you have, sell them on that idea. And I think that's the best approach that I could advise.
Other question?
Also make your assessment. Are they worth collaborating with? Right? I'm given a certain budget, and then I go out and spend it on behalf of the company, and if I don't spend the company's dollars wisely, it reflects very poorly on me. So I have a list of collaborators that are knock it out of the park, guaranteed to work. I have other collaborators where it's more risky, and I balance that all the time. But also flexibility. I just got back from a trip to Asheville not very long ago, because I make sure and I put a peach experiment at Fletcher, North Carolina, because I really like going to Asheville. And I have the flexibility to do that. And there's good researchers there. I mean, so that's important to me. It's important to me to have some good R&D and R&R all at the same time, and hiking on those day off that I take. So, you know, choose your collaborations carefully.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I just to add to that again, and it's the same thing. I mean, I'm now allocating our company's dollars for research to be done that we need. And definitely one of my greatest decisions is how much of a collaborative person are they? Because everything we do is, we grow both in the United States and Mexico, Brazil, Ecuador, everywhere. And so if you can't collaborate, I definitely don't want to do business with you, because it's nothing good is going to come in the end.
I make a comment if I can as a graduate student. One of the favorite programs I got to work with was actually with Mercy Olmsted, the plant innovation program. Only point I'm trying to make is, don't be afraid to look in other departments. I actually got my master's in food science working with a sensory specialist, but then I got to work with the plant people, I got to work with horticulturists, post-harvest. We actually brought in a psychophysicist from the psychology department. She's one of my favorite people ever. So definitely don't be afraid to look in other departments, because I love the fact that we had everybody from all these cool disciplines in the same room at one time. That doesn't happen very often. So.
And one follow-up point to that, one of the questions I get oftentimes from students, how do I identify a faculty mentor? I really want to work with this person. And you go meet them, and they're not so happy and impressed by them. And one of the biggest things that you can do in the selection of it, personality, the soft skills, professional skills, how you click with your advisor is incredibly, incredibly important. And so, as Ryan mentioned earlier, ask their grad students what they like to work for before you sign on to it. But again, it's sort of like that, you're collaborating with your mentor. It should be that experience. But the personality goes a long ways in making a good relationship, and a productive one at that.
Okay.
I think we might. Any other questions? I'm in on them. Are you here?
Stand up, Terry.
All right. So for the whole panel, what have been some major challenges in your career that have been specific to the horticulture industry?
Okay.
Funding. I repeat the question. Lady asked, as far as what is the biggest challenges in horticulture in your career that face me being a horticulturist and being an academic assistant professor? Funding. Trying to get convince some of these groups, these committees, that the projects are worthwhile, that we can fit the whole budget in, and trying to do a large scope of work the best that we can within a limited budget.
So one of the many reasons I returned to Florida was the Florida citrus industry was faced with a crisis situation. Many of you may not realize this, but the disease Wang Long Bing entered Florida now 13 or so years ago, and our industry has declined in production by 75% in that period of time. And so trying to find a solution to Wang Long Bing as a plant breeder, I'm working to develop resistant and tolerant types. So that is a tremendous challenge, and it's painful to see family farmers who've been in the business for generations going out of business because we didn't find a solution fast enough. We are starting to find some solutions, but they're going to be a long time to implement. So is that an answer to your question? That is an extraordinary challenge, and it's both exciting and it's also a tremendous amount of pressure. I wake up many nights wondering if I'm doing the right thing. One of the things I can be sure I'm doing is providing employment for a bunch of technicians and postdocs. And there's a lot of satisfaction in that, helping them along in their careers, but still staying up at night.
Three quick examples. Your company's going down. Worked for a company that was failing. I watched 60% of the employees lose their job. And then I got a job offer from Abbott Laboratories, and I jumped on it. You know, I worked for a venture capital company in between. And so read the handwriting on the wall and be fast on your feet. Second, a major hurricane destroyed the fruit company, tore buildings down, right? All of a sudden, I found myself a safety officer. I mean, I was working on personal hygiene with our employees. That was the biggest science I did for, you know, for months. And then helping instill confidence in our trading partners that we weren't going out of business, traveling and convincing them that we're here for you, we will still sell your produce in the United States, right? And what's the third one? Oh, failure. Projects that fail. Company invests $10 million on a new plant growth regulator, and then I'm the scientist that figures out it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. It's not reliable enough, and making sure that they don't kill the messenger. That's a challenge. And I'm still here talking about it. But I can never speak the name of that product. It's like the Indians, you know. No,
that's Baltimore.
So, well, I would say, I worked in the not-for-profit world at a botanical garden for 27 years, and one of the big things there is botanical gardens don't do agriculture, right? They do. Cultivated people, and that was our whole thing. So my challenge was to how to take growing mangoes and avocados and build a program of relevance to what I was doing. So we actually built a horticulture farm, funded it ourselves, paid money back into our program, made it make money, showed the botanical garden how it made money, made it relevant to our constituents, our 25,000 members that we had, and then built from there. And then I'd tie into what Ed just said. I learned from watching Ed of what's going on in Florida with Hong Long Bing, and in turn, and I work in the I'm a mango guy, so I work in mangoes, and what's happened with the citrus is going to happen with mangoes, because we're just as genetically narrow as the citrus industry is. So what I then tried to do, the big challenge, was to sell to my institution the idea to work on a project that's not going to benefit me, not going to benefit any living member of our botanical garden, not their children, but their grandchildren. And that was the hardest sell we ever had. And that's a real challenge, because they're looking at it and they're like, why are you worried about something that hasn't occurred? It's like, because it's going to. So.
Okay. If we have one more quick question, and then we'll do the little PowerPoint right here. Oh, sorry.
Here's what I wrote down to tell you folks when you're applying for a job in the private industry with a company like the one I work for. Oh, what is one major skill that we have that allows us to excel in our job? Is that fair? Okay. Here's what I would suggest. I would say to my company, if I'm applying for a job doing what I do, I know how to grow plants. I know how to conduct research on my own, by myself, without help from other people. I'm competent. I can do good science. But I really value working on a team. That's important to me. I row on a rowing team. I work out with a workout club. And those are super critical skills. And I want to be loyal to this company. I might just stay here the rest of my whole career because I think this is a good company and I think I can really contribute. And so for me, I think those are my skills, and those are what I would, that's my brand, as Ryan said.
I think a lot of our degree-granting institutions do a phenomenal job of preparing you as scientists, as horticulturists. The one thing that kind of surprised me is the first time I taught. We're not taught how to teach. Very few of us do. And all of a sudden, you're in a classroom with 40, 50 students staring at you, and you're sweating. The ability to communicate, if you're a good scientist but can't communicate it, you still have done nothing. Your ability to communicate and professional skills is probably one of the stronger things that I have, I feel, is transferable to multiple positions, whether it be industry, academia, or whatever you do in life. Communication skills are very, very critical, and focusing on that, developing on that, taking opportunities as a student to get up and teach, as painful as it might be, or present, those skills I think are transferable to almost any career.
And Richard goes out and tells stories.
Well, just to dovetail onto that, I would say, okay, so I work with about 700 growers in Mexico, and I mean from guys that have a half an acre to guys that have 500 hectares, you know, that kind of deal, all different levels of people and chain stores and all of that. And the skill that to do my job that comes into it is totally communication, but basically it is getting them to buy the idea that my science, the information that I have, will benefit them. So if they're a grower, I'm going to put more money back in their pocket. If they're an importing company, that it's going to increase their bottom line. If they're the chain store, that their customer is going to come in, buy more and pay more, and they're going to have less shrink of that stuff on their shelf. And that is all, it's all the same skill. It is identifying what they want, not what I want, and convincing them that I can deliver that, and then delivering it.
So probably what's most important will depend on the level you're looking to be employed at. If you have a bachelor's degree and you're looking to be a technician, showing a level of commitment is certainly important. But I would say across the board, having curiosity, showing that you have a strong commitment to the scientific method. Ideally, do your homework. Know what the lab or company or department is doing so that you can ask good questions. Show that you are going to be a team player, because there are still probably a few people sitting alone in a lab doing work, but that day is largely gone. You're going to be collaborating with a lot of people if you're going to be successful.
All right, I think just to finish up, we have a little PowerPoint kind of illustrate that everyone up here has been in your shoes at some point. So I think I'll just slide through and then I'll let them make a little comment on each if they want. All right. It's Dr. Pearson, very stoked about his poster. So see, even they get that excited about the research. This one, not sure who provided, Dr. Stover, so just traveling pictures.
Yeah, so we're in it for the science, but we're also people. And one of the fantastic things about being a PI is that you have the opportunity to travel different places. I tallied it up and I've been to 15 different countries. And it's not just being at the country, it's getting to know people. But as I know, certainly as I know Richard and Craig, we've been traveling many times together, and get to know these people, develop them as contacts, and enjoy their company.
This is Richard Campbell.
I've been fortunate to go around the world, and I could have never scripted what I'd do in my life. And when you find that Sudario dulcis in Sarawak in Borneo, and it's a long story, and I can't ever tell stories that are that short, so I just let it go.
All right. Oh, this is my dad.
Simple. We work hard. That's what citizens look like before HLB. Okay?
Yep. All right. So this is Citrus Club trip back in the 80s.
In 5 years, we visited 5 countries in the University of Florida Citrus Club, a 50-year-old club. When I joined the fruit company, they said, Campbell, we want to send you to Peru. I said, no problem, sir. I've been there. We want to send you to Costa Rica. That's great. I've been there. So travel with clubs, get involved. That's Dr. Reeder there. Dean Reeder right there with his head. And that's me and my wife. We were just students back then. And so travel and have fun. And those skills you learn are going to really help you in the future.
Is that you on the left, Richard?
That is.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. With the Magnum PI glasses.
Yeah, that's right. Tom Fernandez, he's a professor of Michigan State.
All right. Again. Mm-hmm. Very Pablo Escobar looking. Even I'm not exempt. That is me. Very way, way back in the day.
This young man grew up picking fruit with his father. He once told his elementary school teacher he wanted to be a fruit picker like that. He was a little concerned about it.
Yep. Dr. Stover.
Yeah, so I just want to encourage you. You have to work hard if you're going to be successful. But I would just encourage you to also take time for friends, family, and recreation. There's this quote from Edward Wilson at Harvard that real scientists don't take vacation. Don't buy that. You got to take time to do other things. And I'm thinking back to when I was a new assistant professor at Cornell. I took off half a day to be with my family, and the whole time I was there, I was feeling like I should have been working. Something was wrong there. Don't follow that path. Take time with your family. Don't even think about work when you're with your family, at least some of the time.